You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Hour number two here of the Roto Experts program is on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Should we call ourselves the future FSWA award winners?
That would be pretty good.
I mean, nobody will know, but we're not lying. We could be future award winners. So,
I think so,
because you know what? I was thinking last night, the next, you know, the FSWA talked about how they've expanded some categories,
right,
like best podcast. I think they're going to have to start making individual categories for DFS. I think it's an obvious next step.
So what does it have to do with us calling ourselves future FSWA award winners?
Because, you know, Tony with DFS, you know, he could win an FSWA award because of his DFS acumen.
I can assure you, Tony.
I already won one without one.
I'm saying, you know, there's more to come.
I don't know. No, I'm humble. I just want everybody else to get a chance.
Yeah.
Well, you said you know, future you know, on this show. So.
Unlike Tommy G, he want to win all the awards every year, but only do two shows a week. Come on, man.
Let me ask a question, Greg, about this whole award thing. Don't you think, like, isn't it cool not to win awards? Like, then you become mainstream and people accuse you of, you know,
selling out.
Selling out and being corporate.
Well, do you think? I feel like Terrell Owens is kind of happy he's not in the Hall of Fame. Like, people are talking about Terrell Owens now for weeks.
Yeah,
and then
true.
If he made the Hall of Fame, all right, cool, T.O. made the Hall of Fame. But now T.O.'s back in the news. Everyone wants to talk to T.O.
So he's better off not making any team every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe that's Tommy G's point there, Corey. He's
trying to create publicity for his show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like, if you're a fan of Tommy G, right, aren't you going to, like, oh, man, today's show's we must listen to because Tommy G's going to go off without winning.
He's going to go off, yeah.
But the tone and stuff like that are some of the things I saw I thought was nasty. And I don't think that you got to look behind the curtain at how the process works to get nominated and stuff like that. And to put that on Twitter is kind of like, you know, come on, dude.
The biggest mistake Tommy made, though, is that I don't get paid to be on Twitter.
Exactly.
If I got something really crazy I'm going to say, it's going to be on the radio. And people are going to go and they're going to say, did you hear what he said? And then they're going to go download the show. You do it on the radio, Tommy, not on Twitter.
Yeah.
But it is going to attract people to his radio show, to be fair.
Maybe.
Speaking of that, Crudo, shout out to Ray Flowers for the best baseball series. We already know how Ray gets it done.
Why do they even give out an award? Why don't you just give it to him? I mean, that guy is a machine.
He's not mine.
He's like a piece of iron.
Yeah. Nah, he does his thing, you know what I'm saying? And then, I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into this, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, it sounds like it.
No, but I'm just saying, dude, you know, like you and John Hansen got your thing going, but every time I look, it's like you sacking Fantasy Alarm. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the deal with that?
Well, you know, we're all tight in this.
Yeah,
industry,
we're boys and stuff like that, but family first.
We've got guys that, you know, are on our channel from other different sides, and they have guys there. So I don't know. I guess I could see that, but you know, everybody should be loyal probably to the guys that. Sending the paycheck but you look at it like that. Ray Flowers, though, does a great job baseball-wise. I mean, he's been putting out that guide for years, ever since I've been following fantasy sports, and he does a great job. And that's the guy. I think if you're a baseball writer, that's the guy you want to be.
Yep. And football diehards, Bob Harris,
they won Best Print
Publication.
Yeah.
Those guys work up their ass off and put out like six magazines every year.
Congratulations to Eric Arriciano for getting it done over there with them.
Let's get back into some of the guys we're talking about in the first hour that we didn't really get to a chance to expand on, and that includes Brandon Belt, right? You guys mentioned Brandon Belt a few moments ago, and I thought he's an interesting one to even dive further on, because if you wait every year for Brandon Belt to play every day, Scotty, to be able to put the power together, and last year played a career high in games, hit 17 home runs a year after hitting 18 home runs in 20 less games or so, his last full season before that, which was 2013, he hit 17 home runs. So this is a dude that's going to hit 17, 18 home runs, right? I think that's clear. That's what it is. However, if you dive a little bit further, we brought Brandon Belt up due to the fly ball ratio. So now 46% of the ball, his balls in play are fly balls. Just 9% of those fly balls went out last year. And a lot of that, Tony mentioned, he played in AT&T Park. It is very hard for him to hit a home run. Is this a number? It was a career low, Scott. Is this a number that we should expect to go up and maybe get a couple more home runs? Or it's AT&T Park. Don't expect it now. Do not expect it to go up.
18 the year before, set in less at bats, 17 last year. You know, I think you comfortably got right this guy in for 16 to 20 home runs. You know, you can get two more here on the road, or you know, here or there. I think, you know, I think we saw last year with Brandon Belt, he is what he is. And I think if you play in on base percentage leagues, I think the encouraging thing is that, you know, that the walk rate was up to 15.9 and the strikeout rate was down to 22.6. So I think we've got past the point of Brandon Belt. We're expecting upside because, you know, he's going to turn 29 during the season. So I think you're pretty comfortable in, you know, what you get. You know, I'm probably expecting about a 270 average with about 18 home runs.
Yeah, if you look for improvements in this game, I don't really, as far as his 5x5 game goes, I don't really see where the power is what you're going to get. Obviously, he's a good OBP guy, like Scott mentioned. The batting average and the home runs are going to be around the same. Now, if he moves up in the batting order, then we can start to see maybe he might run a little bit more. You might see him start to score a little bit more, give you a little bit more runs scored. But that's if they decide to move him up in the batting order a little bit. They experimented with it at times last season. So really, that's the only really way that I think that he is can improve. Other than that, he's what you see on the back of the baseball card is what you get.
Is that good enough for you, Tony?
No. If I could get him late, but everybody loves Brandon Belt, so never going to be a guy that I draft. Now, here's the problem. I can isolate his numbers. Last year, he only hit 6 home runs at home. But here's the thing. Right field is the problem in San Francisco.
Yep.
It's a huge shot to get it out of there. This is the problem he's up against. When he hits the ball to right field, he's hitting .417 last year. He hit .376 hitting the ball to right field in 2015. He hit .400 hitting the ball to right field in 2014. He hit .405 in 2013. So that's where he's best, right? The ballpark does not play into his game. And that is the problem. You can't tell him to go the other way. He has to continue what he's doing because that's a success. That ballpark just doesn't line up with him. If he was traded tomorrow, this guy would be a 25 home run hitter.
So basically, he plays in Yankee Stadium. He's going to hit 40. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, these numbers are amazing to look at what he does when he pulls the ball.
Speaking of Yankee Stadium,
it's just the wrong ballpark.
Speaking of Yankee Stadium, how about that, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
My guy!
You should throw out your wishes more in the air. It'll come true.
How about that?
It's a nice job.
That's very interesting to me, that whole Chris Carter situation, because I think it really hurt a lot of the Yankees' impact on fantasy-wise, not as a team.
Sure.
Fantasy-wise, because you looked at it, one of the reasons I thought Gary Sanchez was going to be a good play this year was that he was going to get at-bats at catcher,
DH
in first base. Now they have a lot of bodies there. Even Matt Holliday could get a day off and play at DH. Now we got another guy in the mix. How often do those at-bats get laid out to people is going to be very interesting from the Yankees. And I think that everybody took a little hit in that mix at first base, DH, Gary Sanchez, and Matt Holliday.
I agree.
And you even look at that. You know, Carter doesn't play good infield defense. According to metrics, he was like the third worst defensive first baseman in the majors last year. How are they going to do it? You know, obviously the outlook of Tyler Austin takes a huge hit now. Are they going to platoon Greg Bird and Chris Carter? That's one thing. They could play Carter at DH. There's even some talk of, like, if Aaron Judge, they don't feel he's ready, that they could play Holliday in right field.
Sure.
So we're going to have to wait and see how these at-bats are distributed. And, you know, you look at Carter and you look at the advanced metrics. You know, he's not pulling the ball as much as he did a few years ago. He's, you know, more spraying it more that, you know, over the last 2 years than he has in the past. But the guy can hit it out of any ballpark, but, you know, he's still going to hit like .215.
I just can't believe that a guy hit 40 home runs over $3 million, $3.5 million.
And that's the thing. Also,
well, he got the $3 million for two reasons. You know, 40 home runs, and, you know, he's going to play in that park. And
No. How long is he going to play?
He only got $3 million.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. He only
have average players.
Matt Holliday got 13. He didn't get 40
Scott Feldman got $10 million a year.
Yeah.
$3 million. He definitely took a bargain basement deal, but that also wouldn't need to say.
He sat out on the market for
how
a while.
How long do you think he is a New York Yankee? Because you can flip him.
I think that is the goal.
They might be looking at, the Yankees are like in this unique rebuilding mode that we haven't seen in the past. Mm-hmm. They're probably looking at him as a bridge player.
I think so too, Scotty. I think ideally that they would like to flip him at the deadline to be able
to flip the
one's
other part.
Take him.
Yeah.
You don't think so? Someone
just look. A contender that needed DH.
Yeah, you're right. So
it's
nobody
February.
No, nobody wanted. You could have got him for free, basically.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. I mean, he went for less than a middle reliever.
Yeah. Oh, less than Boone Logan. Logan.
Oh, who's his agent? My goodness.
Dave Stewart, former general manager of the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
He's his agent. Probably should sign with Scott Boras.
Scott Boras probably like, I don't got no time for your 196 batting average.
Probably so. Yeah. That's okay.
Oh, boy.
All right, so we talked about Brandon Belt, Stephen Mote. We talked about Evan Longoria last week. So let me get into Salvador Perez here. He's one of these catchers. He plays every single day. You know that. He for a while, I don't know if he still does because I think they extended him, had the best, most absurd contract in baseball because his agent was stupid. But now...
He's now at 5 years, $52 million. So he makes $10 million a year now.
Good for him. Good for him that he was able to make a little bit more money here. So he'll be 27 years old in May. And Salvador Perez is a guy that, he plays every freaking day. And last year's the first year in a while, they didn't have one of these long playoff runs. So Perez, though... He has seen his home runs go up every single year. 11, 13, 17, 21, 22 last year. The batting average, though, has dipped. 301, 292, 260, 260, 247. On base percentage, in the 280s, he struck out more than he ever has last year at over 21% was the strikeout percentage for him. His fly ball ratio, though, was by far a career high, or fly ball percentage, rather, was by far a career high at 47%. Tony, what do we make of Salvador Perez?
Salvador Perez realized how you make money in Major League Baseball, and it wasn't hitting 290 and 8 home runs. So this was a career that you could have seen the strikeouts coming. Anytime you play Major League Baseball and you only walk 4% of the time, you're swinging at everything. And eventually the strikeouts were going to catch up. So he went from striking out 8% of the time to 21% of the time as he had an increase in power. I think the 250 batting average is where I would put him at this year. I think he hits 20 home runs, and he's going to get you decent RBIs and decent run scores. But the days of 290 are gone because he swings at everything and refuses to walk.
Refusing to walk also brings that BABIP down, right? His BABIP is under 300 as well.
Under 300 for the last 3 years.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
And the thing about it is, but here's the thing, on draft day, you know what I'm saying? If people are saying, oh, well, the batting average went down, you know what I mean? He's striking out more, and his ADP starts to drop, then he presents a buying opportunity because he is one of those catchers.
But,
nope.
Yeah, but I think that the 20 home runs is what attracts him to people, right?
I think so. 260, I'll take 260 and 20, like Tony was going to say, how many catchers can really do that, And this guy's still, I think people forget, this guy is still just going to turn 27 years old during the season.
He's going off the board as the eighth catcher right now. NFBC ADP of 125.
I feel like he's a safe pick, he's not going to hurt me batting average-wise. I could almost just about pencil in about 20 homers. In an OBP league, tout wars, I'm veering away from it. But in standard 5x5, this is a solid, solid pick.
Yeah, I'm fine with that in the standard 5x5. In the OBP league, yeah. I can't get it. I can't do it because the OBP is under 300.
Yeah.
Hey, Zach, who's the ninth catcher?
The ninth catcher is Yasmani Grandal.
See, there's a huge drop-off after Salvador Perez. Grandal's a good player, but he's always hurt. Like, that's the only season he's put together in the major league career. Yep. So I think that Grandal, when you look at a draft, I think if you look to draft one really good catcher that you could count on, Perez is the last one you can get before the drop-off.
And Perez's fly ball rate jumped about 13 points last year. It's like you saw the line drive.
He's trying to hit home runs.
Yeah, he's trying to elevate the ball. And you know, as far as like, yeah, you know, some of the other positions, it's like his hard hit rate went up 9%. So he's making adjustments, and he's still giving you those good power numbers.
Hey, let me ask you all a question.
Tell you what, I'm sorry. You mentioned Yasmani Grandal's the ninth catcher. But in OBP league, Tony, the OBP between Yasmani Grandal and Salvador Perez is 50 points. And that's huge.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, when you take one category out, it'll change the whole thing. But a lot of times, like, when you see batting average and OBP switched in leagues, I find out that more people overemphasize that one category.
Okay.
And you can get a bargain. Like, Perez, instead of being the eighth catcher, if I get him at the 13th or 14th, you know what? That's
great bargain.
Category.
Right.
It's a great bargain.
If you balance out the rest of your lineup, that hurts you less. It's like you can take one or two of those players, I think, you know?
I'll tell you go ahead.
Yeah, just to his point, the 270 batting average that I say you need to be successful in a 15-team league, I say you can't pick – you can 240 or under. Don't go more than one player there, because then you're throwing it out there. And the one player you have to get – if you're going 240 or under – you better be drafting a guy that's going to hit you 40-plus home runs or steal you 50-plus bases. And there's no other reason to go under 240 in any league there except for those two things, because then they give you a statistical edge in a category that you can't get anywhere else. So you got to have a reason. You just can't pick a guy that's going to hit 232
right,
and it's going to get me 10 home runs and 10 stolen bases, because then it's not worth it.
It's not doing anything for you. I tell you what, with Yasmani Grandal, though, I know he only played 126 games last year. But that was
his problems. He can't stay on the damn field.
Well, I mean, like that. I think 126 is not terrible. It's only 13 less games than Salvador Perez, for instance. Right? It's only 13 less games.
Yep.
He hit more home runs. Again, the OBP was 50 points higher. His BABIP was 250. Right? Like, you give me those numbers again, I'm in on Yasmani Grandal. Just for the record, I'm in on him with these numbers.
Yeah, you know, there's a narrative. There's a perception out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you go back to 2015, right? He hit 16 home runs from a catcher position. He'll take that at 234 batting average. I think he lines up close to Perez there, but with Perez, you know he plays every game.
Sure.
He hasn't had any injuries. So that's why people feel more confident in drafting Perez as opposed to Grandal.
Totally agree with
that.
Same
numbers.
Yeah. Corey?
I had a play I want to ask about.
Sure.
Where the hell is Matt Wieters?
He's
still a free agent.
Not on a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the guy that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated some years ago. Orange Jesus, you know what I'm saying? Nobody wants him. He's a bum.
I think he's a Scott Boris guy, I believe, and
I think
they're holding out to the end. The Rays have been talked about.
Braves.
The Rockies in some port. The Braves. So I think there's enough action out there. He's 30 years of age. He did have an arm injury, and when you're a catcher, I just don't know how that one's
going
to work
out. Yeah, and that was unusual,
logic,
because you rarely see that Tommy John in the catchers. And, like, you know, we almost didn't have anything to compare it to. I'm waiting to see what happens with him, because I have Caleb Joseph in my keeper league, you know, and he's, you know, they've been waiting on him. It's like, if Wieters doesn't come back, I want to see how Joseph plays into the mix.
I don't think Joseph will be the starter then. They just signed Wellington Castillo.
Yeah, he'll be the guy.
Yeah, they just signed Castillo. So I think you're in trouble with Joseph, no matter what, where Wieters goes. Wieters is interesting. Tony, I know you like the draft early because you take advantage of situations like this.
Yeah.
Like, you take a situation like Mark Trumbo, for instance, before he re-signed with Baltimore. You were able to get him earlier than you thought, or later than you thought, because he wasn't on a team. Is Matt Wieters another one of these guys you're going to take advantage of not being on a team? Or are you nervous about
where
Wieters ends up? Okay.
No, he's not going to get a job at 7-Eleven. He made $16 million last year in baseball, so even if he has gets $10 million, someone's going to take a shot on him. There's enough teams with poor catching that he is going to land somewhere, and he'll bat in the middle of the order. He's always been a disappointment offensive-wise because our expectations were through the roof, but the bottom line is he's going to be a guy that if you have him as your first catcher and you get him in double-digit rounds, that's a great play.
But this is one of those situations with Scott Boras that we've seen before. I know the rules have changed, but right? We saw Kendrys Morales and Stephen Drew sign in May. Like, will Boras just hold Wieters out until then, though? Is that possible?
I haven't read that anywhere, so I'm hoping that's not possible. And I think they're just waiting for the right contract. I mean, the big thing is not the number of how much money they're getting. It's always the years with guys that are in 30 years of age, because they look at this as their last chance. Like Mike Napoli, Jose Bautista couldn't get multiple-year deals. That's why it took so long with those two players. The same thing's going on with Matt Wieters. He's trying to get a 3-year deal coming off of Tommy John surgery and a 30-year-old catcher. People don't want that.
Yeah, that's why Carter was considering Japan, because he could get 3-4 years over there.
So that was BS, right? You knew
yeah,
that.
It was BS,
that was total
but
BS.
Like that, he was using that as leverage because right. a lot of times when those guys go over there, they'll get those multi-year deals.
Well, what's interesting about that with Chris Carter, we can do it on the other side of the break, is like the Brewers got rid of Chris Carter for Eric Timms, right? Like that was obviously the trade-off they did. They gave Timms more money, yeah. Carter is gone. So they get rid of a guy that hit 40 bombs last year. And supposedly a good clubhouse presence, despite sucking in the field and sucking with the average or whatever.
Yeah.
And signed a guy over from Japan. Now, I'm really interested to get your guys' thoughts on him when we come back. Eric Timms, next, here on the Roto Experts. Chris Carter to the Yankees, $3.5 million deal, incentives, of course. And the Brewers decided to replace him by signing a guy over from Japan, right? We heard the leverage with Chris Carter to Japan, and the Brewers replaced him on their team at his position with a guy from Japan, and that's Eric Timms. Now, Timms goes over to Japan.
Actually, he went to Korea.
Korea?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's what yeah. I was going to say.
Sorry.
That's what makes it tougher.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I don't know what to equate the Korean Baseball League to
yeah.
as far as the level here. I mean, this is a guy that got paid $1.2 million to play baseball in Korea. So people are going to the games, but when we look at the competition, I really don't know what he was playing against.
Yeah, three seasons.
He was 40-40 last year.
124 homers and 64 steals. How does that translate?
Well, he never had more than 8 steals in the minors, so I have no
yeah.
idea. Like, I look at this guy and I wonder why they decided to replace Chris Carter with an Eric Timms, right? Like, this guy played in Korean baseball league, we have no idea what to expect, and they just made him his first baseman.
I really get the feeling from the Brewers though that they've just got bare bones.
They gave him money.
Yeah.
They gave this dude money.
They gave him yeah, 3-year deal, $15 million.
That's not nothing. It's more than Chris Carter made.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
They gave this guy money. Number one, in the NFBC, he's currently the 203rd ranked player. He's going 206.
Right.
Okay. In the FSTA draft, as we go back there, he went in the 13th round. I mean, that is not late by any means, right? Like, that is before Dallas Keuchel, Danny Salazar, Carlos Santana, Lance McCullers, we talked about yesterday, Brian McCann. Like, that is before some monster names here.
93 games in 2013 at the AAA level. He had a total of 10 homers and six stolen bases. So you're not going to get a lot of steals from this guy, but you're looking at least 20-plus homer power. I think he's got some natural power there and, maybe about 10 or a dozen steals.
I bring him up because, Tony, you brought up the fact that when there's the unknown just tends to go later. People like to bet on what they saw. We've never seen anything Eric Timms because he hasn't played in Major League Baseball in 5 years, 6 years.
Yeah. So
what do we think of him?
The problem. Yeah, this is the problem. And this is a kid, because he steals so many bases in Korea, that people are looking and people are drafting early and people are taking chances. We're talking about a guy that can hit 30 home runs based on his Korean numbers and steal you 30 bases. And he had 13 in 2016. He had 40 the year before that and 11, so which is crazy numbers. Now, I went back and I did some research on the Korean Baseball League. Yong-ho Kang, the Pirates guy, shortstop that's in the news for all the wrong reasons, but he came over and played well in Major League Baseball. Bung-ho Park came last year to the Twins, didn't play well. Hyun-soo Kim, who plays for
sure.
Baltimore, has played well. Sin-soo Choo played in the Korean Baseball League. So some of these guys have translated well to Major League Baseball and have been able to star. So it's about 50-50 there. Hung-chi Ryu pitched in Korea, then
sure.
came over here, and he's pitched well in Major League Baseball.
He did, yeah.
So I'm looking at these numbers, and I think that the 13th round is a little too early for me. If I was going to pencil him in, based on what I see, we see a power hitter here. I would probably pencil him in for 25 home runs. I would only give him 10 stolen bases and about a 250, 260 batting average down from those numbers we saw in Korea. And just hope that I get more than that. And he's outfield eligible, even though he's going to play first base for the Brewers.
That helps him being in the position, having that extra position.
I'm interested.
Is that bat's going to be a problem?
If there's anything that's apparent there, though, it's like, like Tony said with the projections, I was saying, he does have natural power skills. There's some minor speed to talk about there. And, you know, usually when guys go, oh, you know, talking to Rusty Rowell about this, usually when guys go out of the country, they get out of sight, out of mind, and they have to, a lot of times they have to come back to AAA and have to work their way back into the majors. And this is not the case with this guy who went over to Korea instead of Japan. So the Brewers got to be high on him for some reason.
This is the dude that's going to hit behind Ryan Braun.
Yeah, I'm looking at this.
He's
going to
back cleanup on this team.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much he's going to run Tony out of that cleanup spot for the record. But he's going to back
cleanup. Yeah, that's why I think he'll get 10 stolen bases, which is it's great for first baseman.
Sure.
And it's a bonus. But I wouldn't go there. But you got at least some upside there. I mean, if you put him down for 10, he could steal more.
Good hitter's park.
I think he doesn't get more than 10. Yeah, it's a lot.
They said
he
became like a legend in Korea over those 3 years.
Well, yeah, if he was 40-40, you would be too.
1.2 million. Yeah. They played him 1.2 million to play over in Korea. That's a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Interesting. So
you probably let me not. Let me long time.
What is wrong with you?
Anyway, I'm intrigued by this dude. I'm intrigued by this guy who, you know, we draft all these minor leaguers, right? Like Lee, and we try to bet on them. This guy's played professionally for a long time. He's 30 years old. He's gonna be back cleanup on a Brewers. I think it's a good spot.
See, that's the thing. Tony mentioned all those guys came over as 50-50. This guy does have major league experience. Not professional.
American
experience, not made the major league level. And he obviously was a AAA.
And you know what? Some of the issues with some of these guys that come over that do have a transition period, right, is a language barrier. Like, to be able to fit the culture to the language. He doesn't have any of that.
Right.
So maybe
he doesn't have to hire a translator.
He doesn't.
No.
And so maybe, you know, this guy's going to come in and get off to a hot start here. Eric Tim, someone to put on those sleeper lists and watch
this. That's the thing about getting off to a hot start. It's like, what kind of book do they have on him? They only have a minor league book from 3 years ago.
Right. 100%. I like Eric Timms. I just wrote him down. 2017 sleeper list.
Put a star next to his
name. He's the first name on the list. There you go. When we come back, we pick a team of day. The Boston Red Sox. No. Get ready. Get set. It's up next. The Roto Experts. We like to pick a team, pick two similarly ranked players, and let the guys debate it. Today, we got the Boston Red Sox. So let me ask you, Tony, you are the Bostonian, the resident Bostonian on the panel. So we ask, Hanley Ramirez, we spoke about briefly, Hanley Ramirez or Dustin Pedroia?
I like Hanley Ramirez a lot this year, and I've only done two drafts so far, and I was unable to get him in either of these drafts. I think batting that middle of the order, David Ortiz now out of the batting order, Hanley's going to take the DH role there, 33 years of age. I hate people that use the term professional hitter, but he's a professional hitter, and now I'm just like those people. You look at him, the contact is always there. He's going to hit you 25 to 30 home runs. He's going to knock in 100 in this batting order. I mean, this is a guy, because he'll be a DH, he still has first base eligibility that you can use from last year. I think he's a guy that's being underdrafted.
Scotty?
I definitely got to go Ramirez, of course. You know, whenever you talk about Hanley Ramirez, you're talking health concerns. But, you know, jumping back big in a way with the homers last year, his hard hit rate went up almost 7% last year. And you know, if he does stay healthy, you're going to get a similar batting average. You'll get more homers, and Pedroia doesn't run like he used to.
Nope.
You can get almost twice as many homers from Hanley. So to me, it's definitely Hanley.
Okay, Corey.
I think this is going to make this a trifecta hat trick going for Hanley Ramirez. What you get from Pedroia, probably hit a little bit closer to 300 or make it over 300, but with Hanley, you're going to get a little bit more pop in the bat, like you said, hitting the middle of the order. Designated hitter should be able to keep him a little bit healthier. He'll still have first baseman eligibility, too, so you got to go. The thing with Hanley is you just worry sometime about, is Hanley going to be motivated? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know Pedroia is going to come out there, you know what I'm saying, every time he lays him up, he's going to give it all he's got as long as he's healthy also. He had some injury things last year, but with Hanley, it's kind of like, I'm good. I don't feel like playing today. You know what I'm saying? So that's the worry.
I've been told that about Hanley. Like, people, like, you know, like, beat guys and stuff like that about the Red Sox, say he's a honeymoon player. Like, when he first gets to a team, like, you know, he's all into it, and then it kind of slacks off.
So here's Hanley. I went last year, and this backs up Scott's point about watching the games. This kid puts a little in his favor. Hanley, in 2015, coming back to the Red Sox to play the outfield and was lost out there.
He
looked like he was out of shape. Ooh. And he was a little overweight. I went to a game in April and in Atlanta, and I went early, and we met some of the Red Sox. And Hanley Ramirez was standing there with an Under Armour shirt on, and he was chiseled like you could believe, in the best shape of his life. And I said, this guy's going to go off.
Kind of like we feel about Pablo Sandoval.
I don't know. I haven't seen Pablo in an Under Armour shirt.
I remember that.
And I don't know if we're going. I don't think we're going that far with Pablo. You could be in good shape, then there's Under Armour shape. I don't think he's sporting that
he's
contract
round.
Yet for an endorsement.
He's round, yeah, that circle. But I had heard exactly the same thing that spring from a Red Sox beat guy, what Tony had just said.
I love Hanley last year. I got him. I made sure I had him because I talked to Tony about it as well, and he's like, this guy's in great shape. He doesn't have to worry about playing the field, and he went off and had a nice year. He hit the home runs in bunches. And now he's going to be DH, right? And that's another transition for him, because Mitch Moreland's going to play first base every day. DHing, like, can he focus on hitting? How is it going to be for him not being in the field? This is another transition, so I don't, like, there is another question mark here with Hanley that I'm not sure about.
See, I agree with you, and this is I talked to Cliff Floyd about this. Cliff Floyd said the worst year of his career was being DH. He just didn't know what to do, not playing the field, and just sitting there waiting to hit. He says you become in baseball a creature of habit, and it was the first time in his life that he was just sitting there waiting a bat, and he couldn't do it. He said it really affected his overall game at the plate.
100%. Let's get to the other guy here in Dustin Pedroia. Dustin Pedroia, longtime second baseman, had a good year last year for Boston, and he's someone I never really am interested in drafting, but Pedroia had a really good year for the Red Sox last year. Can he do it again, Corey?
He had his best season last year since his MVP campaign. So basically what you saw was he got back to some better plate discipline, started to hit his averages a little bit more. As the team got better, so did he. I think when you come into this season, you got to project him as a 300 hitter. You know what I mean? Might give you 15 homers. The RBIs are not going to be something that's going to be up there. But, yeah, I think he brings back a very similar season to last year. Not going to give you too much in stolen bases. But, yeah, he's about a 305, 15 home run second baseman. But the way second basemen are hitting 25 home runs right now, you're going to – and they're also stealing 10 to 15 bases, too. Pedroia is going to get pushed down on draft day, but he's still a nice consolation prize.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, though. But, like, you know – but. No, maybe, you know, we were talking about him yesterday. It's like, you know, like to Corey's point, I could get, you know, maybe like a lot more homers from a Jonathan Scope and take a little bit of a hit in the batting average.
Comparatively, in the FSTA here, you had Jonathan Scope win the 12th round of the draft.
Yeah.
Dustin Pedroia went the 9th.
Yeah, I would have waited for Scope.
I think so, too. Yeah. Tony, what about you and Dustin Pedroia here?
Well, Corey summed it up. He just called Dustin Pedroia a consolation prize. That's how far he's fallen down in my eyes as well. I got to ask, when you draft him, what are you getting?
We expect,
like, like 15 home runs, okay. That puts him 14th out of second baseman in Major League Baseball, 14th in home runs. So stolen bases, 7. 7's not even going to put him in the top 30 for second baseman. So you're getting the nice batting average of 300, and that's basically what you're paying for.
Like, you overpaying? It's like, is this a guy that should be your middle infielder?
It may be. If you have him, besides the 300 batting average, you need him to play every day. You need him to play 155
games. Well, I'll take that over Hanley. That's the one thing I'll take over Hanley. But Hanley could give me 25, 27 homers. We're comparing these two guys.
At this point, what we're looking at Dustin Pedroia, first of all, we always underrate the run scored category, right? So he gets 105 runs scored. That's a great number. We'll take that every time, and we're getting 300 batting average. So we're getting 2 RBIs there. And for a second baseman, 74 RBIs is not bad either. So we're getting about a 2.5 category player. I don't think that belongs in the first 10 rounds. So to me, if he falls past that, I draft him, and I think he can be a guy that fulfills those positions. But he's also 33 years old. maybe we're seeing a guy on the downside of his career. And if he doesn't reach those numbers, and as you mentioned, doesn't play every day, we're in trouble. This guy's being drafted a little too early.
Yeah, it's like he goes in the ninth round of the FSTA draft. Is like, you know, are we talking about, you know, what Corey's point in football, like closure here, like romance? Like, you know, is the name still putting him in the ninth round?
That must be. Let me look up his NF, because you know the experts, how they, you know, they was out there. They was all drinking and stuff when they was out there, too. So you never know. Let me look at the NFBC.
I got you, NFBC.
Okay, he's 139, right? He's the 14th. Yeah, he's 14th. He's 14th second baseman going off the board. In front of him is at 13 is DJ LeMahieu. Behind him at 15 is Javier Baez.
Yeah, I think that's right where he belongs, right there on 14. And that's what I was when I brought out those numbers there. Yeah, that's where he belongs. So the guys at the NFBC have actually done a better job than the guys that were drinking.
Yeah, right? No, we have evidently we have different numbers.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you have him at?
He's the 13th ranked. Javier Baez is not listed as second baseman on this list.
Who?
Baez isn't listed.
Okay. I'm at
142.
Okay, I'm at Fantasy Pros, right?
I'm at stats.com.
I'm at Fantasy Pros, but what Fantasy Pros is giving me a ADP consensus.
Okay,
right.
Based
that's
on NFBC, Yahoo, RT Sports.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So a little bit different. Yeah. A little bit different. Okay, that's fine. All right, the other Red Sox one we had for you today, and I'll start with you, Corey Parson, for this one. Are you ready?
Just about.
You didn't really sound right.
I was looking at my watch because I wanted to know how if we were getting close to the break because I have to bathroom.
You have to use the bathroom?
Insider info, you are the Roto Experts.
Appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, there you go right there.
That's the funniest thing ever.
Corey Parson.
Yo.
David Price or Chris Sale?
This is a tough one right here. Both of these dudes, two top-notch pitchers. Now they're on the same ball squad right here in the American League East. Give me, boy, this is they're basically like the same guy. You feel what I'm saying? Both is going to give you that ERA. Both under 3.5. Both of them is going to have about 220, 225 strikeouts. The wins are coming in the high teens. Give me Price because he's been there already. You feel what I'm saying?
He's in Boston already.
Yeah, he's been in Boston already. He's familiar with the territory. The team is familiar with him. He's not a new guy coming into that clubhouse. And then Chris Sale cut up his uniform last year. It's kind of weird. You know what I'm saying? I understand he wanted to get out of the shy. And, you know, he's still a dynamic pitcher, though. Both guys, they seem like the same to me right now. I'm going to take Price just off the fact that he was there already.
Taking David Price. Yeah. Scott Angle.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Chris Sale here. I mean, it's very close. But, you know, Price allowed the most hits in the majors last year. He allowed a career-high 30 home runs. His hard hit rate was the highest of his career at 34.8% allowed. Look, he's still going to give you a ton of strikeouts. He's got over 220 in each of the last 3 years. Both these guys are like making adjustments later in their careers. I don't think the strikeout rate jumps back up for Chris Sale because, as we heard from Nick Hosla when he was on, you know, he's thinking about the longevity of his career. So he's throwing the changeup less, going to the slider more, etc. I think I'm going to get a lower whip and a lower ERA with Chris Sale, and that's going to split the difference for me.
Tony, you want to break it down?
Yeah, it's Chris Sale. Easily for me, actually. It's not even close. David Price, not a guy that I'm looking to roster. A lot of those strikeouts are based on the innings that he's been able to accumulate the last few years, and his K per nine has dropped under its strikeout per inning. Chris Sale, we talk about how the strikeouts have dropped, but he's still at 9.25.
Yep.
And I don't believe all the stuff that Chris Sale is bought into pitching to contact. I wouldn't shock me if he goes out to try to throw balls by people again. The only concern I have with Chris Sale is that maybe he was injured last year, because as much as people say, and I think it's a lot of hogwash, that he was pitching and changing his style because his fastball velocity was down. That's what worries me the most about what would happen to Chris Sale. That would make me lean a little to David Price, but I'm going to throw it all out the window. He went through every physical to get a contract he did with the Red Sox, so I got to believe that they have this thing right, and Sale's the play.
I agree. I also prefer Chris Sale. David Price was just—he was beat up a lot of times last year. I know a lot of people are very frustrated with him. And I think
he rebounds, though.
I think so too. I don't have any issue drafting him.
No home runs. He's not going to let up 30 home runs again.
I don't have any issue drafting him, Tony. I just prefer Chris Sale.
Is he a fantasy SP one?
Fringe.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect word for it. I would love him as a two.
Yeah, Price or Martinez.
Pedro Martinez?
No, not
that. Okay.
As a broadcaster or
Carlos?
I'll take David Price.
All right.
Do you know?
No, Scott.
At least I picked a pitcher. Yeah. Come on. No, I go David.
And a Red Sox. That's you were in a Red Sox.
And a Red Sox pitcher. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah. That's right. Hey, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. The Pecota projections are out. We'll see what we can make out of those on the other side of the break. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Coda rankings came out yesterday. Trying to project wins, losses, team averages, OBP, slugging percentage, so on and so forth. How much stock do you take into this, Tony Sincotta?
It's a great question.
Thank you.
I think when you look at it, no system is 100% effective. Like, but it gives you something to go by, something to look at. They have a formula that they come to their conclusions. They can explain their work, which you've been hearing in math class since you were in second grade.
Yes.
And I like this. I think it's pretty good. And Bill James is a guy that's, I mean, who's better at baseball than this guy?
He probably doesn't even watch baseball.
All right, now explain this to me, because yes. Who are these dudes? Give me the background on Pecota. Dakota. What is this? Dakota.
Pecota.
Named after former Royals utility infielder Bill Pecota.
That is correct.
I can't hear you.
That is correct.
Named after former Royals utility infielder Bill Pecota.
It's amazing.
Wow, that's finally good producing by you.
So Pecota, he's been telling you that for 10 years. Pecota stands for Player Empirical Comparison and Optimization Test Algorithm.
All right, so now what goes into this?
It was developed by Nate Silver, who did a...
What?
Oh, yeah.
Nate Silver did this, too?
Oh, yeah.
This guy's supposed to be good with numbers.
He will argue he actually got all the numbers right, actually.
Okay, there you go.
Just saying.
I didn't know Nate Silver did this. Mm-hmm. It was into this type of stuff, too.
Yes, he is. Right. Yes. It forecasts players' performance in all the major categories.
Based on comparing them to players with similar sets metrics. Or past production.
Yes.
Yeah.
Production metrics such as batting average, isolated power, unintentional walk rate for hitters, or strikeout rate and ground ball rate for pitchers.
It finds comparable players.
Usage metrics including career length and player plate appearances or innings pitched. Phenotypic attributes including handedness, height, weight, career length, minor league level, fielding position. And as Scotty said, you're comparing individual players against each other.
And what it does is basically like takes those individual players and then for their like standings projections, it like puts them all together as a team.
And there you go.
Yeah.
So that's Pecota.
So this is what I clicked on right here, right? It took me to some standings. Right.
Yeah.
Are these projections for this season?
For this season.
I have the Pecota like. It's proprietary, so you got to subscribe, I think, to see a lot of the individual projections. But, you know, they did publish, like, you know, their odds to, like, win the World Series and projected wins for each team.
The favorites, the team that's going to win the most games, according to Pecota, that's the Los Angeles Dodgers.
How about that?
The Dodgers over the Cubs, in fact. Mm-hmm. They project the Dodgers to win 98 games this year. Finish with the best record in baseball. What say you, Scotty?
That's a big matzo ball to throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
97 more, like nine more than the Cubs? I don't know if I quite agree with that.
Well, yeah, this is simple math, right? Simple numbers.
Yeah.
The worst record in baseball belongs to the San Diego Padres at 70 and 92.
So that's why.
I got them at 68.
Really?
Yeah. You must be looking at last year's.
What are you looking at this year's?
So am I.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this year's too, Scotty. 70 and 92.
I'm looking at an article by Rob Main with all the projections.
I'm looking at baseballprojections.com. So that seems
right. I'm on baseballprospectus.com, an article by Rob Main with all the Pacoda odds.
I don't have to tell you.
Me and Greg at the same place, Scott.
I'm not looking at an article by Rob Main, though.
Rob Main works for Baseball Prospectus.
Well, I'm looking at the actual Pacoda rankings, though. I don't have to tell you, man. Sorry. In the American League, the best team will be the Houston Astros, Tony, at 93-69. Better than the defending champion Indians. Better than the Boston Red Sox. They have the Astros winning this division by 6 games over the Mariners and by 9 games over the Rangers, who I think a lot of people think are one of the favorites to really win all the AL. What about the Astros having a nice year this year?
I would like to wager with the people from Pacoda on this one because Ooh. I like the Astros' offensive lineup. I think it's the best in baseball, arguably, when you look 1 through 8 or to compare them to the National League teams, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I just think this offensive lineup is great, but what do they have for a pitching staff? I mean, they're hoping Lance McCullers comes back and can get 200 innings out of him. Dallas Keuchel,
getting out of Keuchel coming back?
It's 1 year off and on. You look at the rest of this rotation, Mike Fiers, the guys that are out there. I don't see it. I don't see how this team can win 98 games.
I don't see it either. It's just a lot of games to expect from this team, despite how good their hitting should be. The pitching's just simply not going to be good enough, I don't think. Now, I'm not a subscriber to Baseball Prospectus. I don't have the individual individual depth chart where they're getting the wins from. So
how much does it cost?
I don't know, man.
I'm not fitting up for it by myself.
That's because you spent $7 on a draft.
I bought that damn draft app. Yeah. I might not be able to eat this weekend.
But I can tell you the Cubs, right? You wonder how the Dodgers would win 7 more games than the Cubs. And I am able to see their stats right here.
Oh, okay? Well, they gave you those for free.
You mean the Cubs and the Indians for free.
The other thing is with the Cubs and comparing them to the Dodgers, the schedule is a lot different, and I don't know if they break it down by a game-by-game basis. When you look at the National League West and you get to play the San Diego Padres, who we expect to be the worst team in the league,
right.
Yeah.
You get to play the Colorado Rockies.
Sure,
the
Arizona.
Rockies think they're going to be Arizona. So that can easily make up the 7-game difference.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Absolutely, that's exactly what it is. Absolutely. Right, that's 100% what it is, Tony.
Greg, you said they had Houston for 98?
They had Houston for 94, I said.
All right, okay. I'm looking at I got Houston at 93 wins.
I got them at 93 too.
Hold on, they have Houston at 93. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. All right, cool. No, I just wanted to make sure I was on the right page.
Still the best record in the AL.
No doubt. They got but look who they have us for the worst record in the AL.
That would be the Kansas City Royals.
Holy shit! I thought the Royals were still good.
Evidently, Pacoda disagrees.
They might be getting rid of Lorenzo Cain too.
Really? Well, yeah. I haven't heard that rumor yet.
Well, there's a lot of rumors, like the Cardinals, like one of the teams in on him.
The Cardinals are in on him now. Yeah, even after Dexter Fowler signing.
It's like before the Fowler signing, they were.
That was like 3 months ago.
Yeah, but there's still like I was saying, there were rumors flying around about Kane, like, all offseason.
Well, I think there's more of the winter meetings, and it didn't happen. Kind of like McCutcheon, right? McCutcheon's not going anywhere now.
No.
So, I don't know how accurate these rumors are that you're hearing, Scotty. But the Cubs. Does anyone have any questions about the Cubs and their Pacoda standings here?
I think Javier Baez is the biggest question mark. What do we expect for at-bats, and what are we going to get from him? And then I think a young kid like Addison Russell is a guy that's going to be all over draft boards because if you really look at the numbers, they're not elite. He's way down in the batting order. But I think he could be a guy that's going to be a star in this game for a long time to come.
Yeah, so Pacoda for Addison Russell projects him for an OBP of 311 with 21 home runs, 74 ribbies, stealing 5 bases with an average of 242. For Javi Baez, they project 20% of his at-bats come at second base, 20% come at third base, 15% at stolen base at shortstop, and then the rest to just be a pinch hitter. So they expect him to play 133 plate appearances at second, 133 plate appearances at third. be out there.
That only gets to 266.
There you go. Rest pitch hitter. He is projected to about 243 with 18 homers, 53 ribbies. There you go, Javier Baez. Right now, they project the Cubs' fifth starter to be World Series hero, Mike Montgomery. Take a break. Come back. Talk more baseball. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.